Committee, I welcome you with open arms.
Is that so? How late do you stay open?
You don't understand. I could have had class. I could have been a contender. I could have been somebody.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
I hope they are watching. They'll see. They'll see and they'll know. And they'll say, she wouldn't even harm a fly.
What's up, everybody? You're listening to NoCo Cinema here on WGN Plus. We are your guide to cinema here in the city of Chicago. I am Tom Hush.
And I'm Connor Cornelius.
And we're reunited.
Yes.
And it feels so good.
Oh my gosh, Tom, that hug that we spent the last 20 minutes in just embracing, that was big.
It was really warm, too.
It was so nice. And my goodness, it's sort of a good day for it. It's a little brisk.
Yeah, it's brisk today. If you're in the city of Chicago, I mean, we're recording this on Saturday, September 8th. Brisk day, 66 degrees. Personally, my favorite weather.
Yeah.
I really like the 50s and 60s.
This is definitely one of my favorite temperatures.
It's good movie watching weather.
Mm-hmm.
Keeps you indoors, maybe, you know, cozy up a little bit.
Yeah, exactly. Get close to somebody that you care about. Tom, let's just real quick, let me just touch you.
Here we go. Yeah.
In other news,
we've got a lot to talk about today. In the time between last episode and today, so many things have happened. A lot of big movie news that I think a lot of people are going to want to pay attention to. So this will be a little bit of our newsy recap sort of thing of an episode. Let's start off with the passing of a very big personality in Hollywood, Burt Reynolds. Died this past week, age 82. He was famous for his roles in Deliverance, Smokey and the Bandit, and personally my favorite, Boogie Nights. Love Boogie Nights. And we just wanted to take just a brief few moments to talk about the fact that, you know, Connor and I are on the younger end, and a lot of people, you know, you read these articles, they're people who grew up watching Burt Reynolds, and, you know, they saw Deliverance in theaters, they saw Smokey and the Bandit and Hooper and all these other movies in theaters, and he was really a big deal, very popular on late night talk shows.
Yeah.
I think that's really where a lot of people grew to love him, was through his personality, and he was just a total known quantity on those, and it was good for his image because it really it gave people the sense that they knew Burt Reynolds.
Right.
And he was the kind of interview that you just don't get anymore in terms of you get stars going on late night. They kind of just pimp their movie. Everything's pre-planned, really nothing surprising.
Burt was like the epitome of a style more so than just a star.
Yeah, he was very much a man, the 70s man.
If you were putting him in a movie, you weren't just putting in, say, like a Matthew McConaughey role. You were putting in the epitome of 70s masculinity.
Totally. Totally. And I mean, as much as he was an actor, he was a sex symbol.
Mm-hmm.
Very much known for his Cosmo kind of cover sheet. I don't know if it was a cover, but it was like the full page spread
where you couldn't tell where the bearskin rug began, ended, and his
mustache
his luscious jungle of chest hair began.
Dude, that hamburger meat, I'm fucking jealous.
Yeah, as we all should be.
But I really think he was an actor that didn't get a lot of opportunities to shine. I think he had said in a few interviews, there were roles that he was offered that he wished he had taken. Chief among them, the role that Jack Nicholson eventually played in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Really?
Which netted Jack Nicholson the Oscar. Obviously, you know, I'm glad Jack Nicholson had that role. He absolutely did a fantastic job, but I know that it would have been interesting to have Burt in a serious role like that. If we want to talk about something like Deliverance, which a lot of people focus on because of the infamous squeal like a pig scene, you know,
right.
the rape scene. And it gets that rap, you know, the whole dueling banjo thing, you know, everybody kind of latches on to those almost cultural memes of a sense. But really, go back and watch Deliverance. Him and John Voight are really doing something special there. And it's a little bit dated in a lot of the ways it does things, but
sure.
Like it's Deliverance is a spectacular movie if you want to get a sense of what Burt Reynolds was capable of, especially in the prime of his career. You do also have films like Smokey and the Bandit.
Yeah.
Cannonball Run.
Like, a little bit more what you might think of when you think of a Burt Reynolds movie.
Bingo. The Longest Yard. This kind of like this, as you said, like the epitome of 70s masculinity. Him and Clint Eastwood were like the dudes. Like they were the balls, man.
They were the left and right ball.
Yeah. And I mean, even there's cultural reference to him in other ways. Like I'd say the character of Ron Burgundy in Anchorman that Will Ferrell crafted is very much a Burt Reynolds type, not just in like look, you know, with the chest hair and the mustache, but like in his attitude towards things.
Yeah. He was very confident.
Truly. And he was daring to do some, like I said, with the Cosmo. I'm pretty sure he did Playgirl as well. He was very, you know, open with the whole male sexuality
he
thing.
He was comfortable in his skin.
Yeah, very much so. And honestly, I don't think we can cap it off with something greater than Boogie Nights.
No.
Absolutely love Burt Reynolds in Boogie Nights.
And that's something that I've been realizing lately. Paul Thomas Anderson is so good at just taking an actor maybe known for a certain character or whatever and just giving them the absolute best fucking role of their life.
Totally. I mean, look, he did it with Burt. He did it with Tom Cruise in Magnolia. Some people really get up on Tom Cruise in Magnolia. I think he's great in Magnolia.
Yeah. I'm not a huge Mark Wahlberg fan. Back to Boogie Nights.
Yeah.
Perfect. The best role that Mark Wahlberg ever had, probably.
Yes. Hands down. I really do think so. And it sucks that it's kind of funny because Burt Reynolds and Mark Wahlberg went opposite ways on it. Because Burt, I think, didn't initially get what Boogie Nights was. Like, I think he did the movie because it was going to be his comeback. It was going to be... you know, he's with a young director. It was playing to his strengths. It took place in the 70s. It was very sexy, which is Burt Reynolds. But later on, I think Burt really came to appreciate what P.T. Anderson got him to do in that movie and how good he is in it. Like, Burt Reynolds is fantastic in Boogie Nights. And then Mark Wahlberg, on the other hand, has, like, renounced Boogie Nights.
Really?
Yeah, he said that he wouldn't have done it if he could go back. He wouldn't do it, despite the fact that it is hands down one of his best performances, if not his best performance totally. So Burt, thank you. A lot of fun movies with some really bright spots and just a big personality. You know, it's people like Burt Reynolds don't come around, and I'm not trying to say that he didn't have a problematic attitude towards women.
No, absolutely did.
But I think he was always pretty self-aware of it. One of his greatest romances was with the fantastic Sally Field. And he said in later interviews that she was like the one who got away. You know, he really loved Sally Field and he wished that he could have been I think he kind of alluded that he wished he could have been better for her because Sally Field is such a spectacular person. As far as I can tell, I've never met Sally Field.
Right.
But she's always been super well respected. Everybody loves Sally Field. So I think he was at least, he's like one of those guys that was just like, yep, I did some good things, did more bad things. And I think hopefully he got to make peace with it.
And I do think that that's a good note to maybe leave on with. We've obviously never met these people and we don't know the things that they've done that are either really good or really, you know, really abhorrent or reprehensible. But at the end of the day, all you can really do with the relationship that Tom and I have with Burt Reynolds, you know, is just having seen him on screen and as fans, we just respect his output and his the limited perspective that we have on him.
Absolutely. Couldn't have said it better. So let's go from Burt Reynolds over to some other big Hollywood news. Something that the New York Times called the worst decision, potentially the worst decision in Oscars history, has been quickly reversed. Connor, why don't you give us a little bit of a lowdown here?
Yeah, so we've talked about a little bit the popular film category that had been added into the upcoming Oscars at the behest of Disney-controlled broadcasting company ABC, which had bought the rights to broadcast the Oscars for the next, you know, 3,000 years. and the, yeah, as Tom said, on Thursday that the decision had been reversed. I think that it's... thank God, because it's essentially just a participation trophy for whoever spent the most money on a summer blockbuster.
Right.
That's what it felt like it was going to be. And it almost also felt like Disney just trying to squirrel their way into getting an Oscar every year, or at least getting one of their six Marvel movies or Star Wars movies into, you know, getting them to weasel their way into the Oscars, which is just
it's fucking lazy. And the worst thing is that it by that existing, it implies that something like Black Panther could not contend for Best Picture. I've always thought that Best Picture, I don't know if we've talked about it on here before, but we all generally know the term Oscar bait. The series, you know, the set of kind of preconditions that are guaranteed you at least an Oscar nod for Best Picture. You know, like especially like heavy dramas that like stick to a certain mold and really don't do anything adventurous, but like, you know, definitely play on one's emotions. They do. There's a litany of things. I think everybody has their own. You could come up with a list of 1,000 things that qualify for Oscar bait. I would call something like Forrest Gump Oscar bait.
Sure.
It's an inspirational story.
Fiction
about, fiction is against its favor because I think true stories always pull better in the Oscars. It's like based on the true story of a man.
Right. However, Forrest Gump, I guess, is kind of an odd example, right? Because the fiction allows this character to weasel his way into all of these different
real
events. Right.
So it's a inspirational story about a person that is that has a handicap, but isn't so handicapped that it's weird.
Yeah,
which is stupid. I think we could do better for the Disabled Persons of America. They pretty much hit all the beats of just like, yeah, you remember John Lennon? That happened. You remember the March on Washington? That existed. You remember that, don't you?
Remember Vietnam?
Remember NAM?
You goddamn right you do.
Yeah.
CCR?
So one of those things.
CCR?
I think that's a whole different conversation about the overuse of CCR in Vietnam movies, but
let's play devil's advocate here for just a quick second, because both let our opinions known on it. And the popular Oscar decision was sort of added. It's kind of the headline maker for the greater initiative to sort of restructure the Oscars, right?
Right.
Let's talk about how long the Oscars are.
It's like a 4-hour broadcast.
Exactly. The last one was like a 4-hour telecast.
Boring, too.
Exactly. So they were talking about paring it down, giving away some of the Oscars during commercial breaks, trying to get it down to 3 hours, and then sort of the cherry on top, which was the popular Oscar vote, try to add another category that would get some more viewers, mm-hmm. you know, interested in watching it.
With more quote-unquote popular films, more populist films.
Right, and viewership for the Oscars is the most popular award. It's the biggest audience in any award show. You know, it's bigger than the Emmys, it's bigger than the Grammys, mm-hmm. the VH1 Awards. It's bigger than all of those. By a lot, but it's still, they're still netting like 45.7 million viewers was the last.
Yeah, it's on a downward trend.
It's on a downward trend, but so you can understand why they're wanting to do that.
Sure.
But going back to our point, there were people who spoke out against it. Like Rob Lowe said, it's nothing short of the end of the movie business.
Oh, shut up, Rob Lowe. Come on, man. You're smarter than that.
Go back to the West Wing.
I mean, that's just hyperbolic. End of the movie business, no, but I thought it was a stupid decision because it implies that a best picture can't also be a popular picture.
Right.
Like, and granted, very popular pictures have won in the past, and even actors in popular movies, but it usually has to be because of a death or something. Like Heath Ledger, while I still think probably gave the supporting actor performance of that year or one right. of them, you know, the nomination alone, I think, was totally warranted. But he definitely got the push because he died. Like, I'm not trying to be cynical. It's just kind of the truth because The Dark Knight, probably it was the only, that was like the only major category it was nominated for was because Heath Ledger had passed away, and despite giving a stellar performance.
Right. The Academy doesn't like superhero movies.
No, and they don't necessarily have to, because a lot of them are pretty middle of the road.
Sure.
They don't push many boundaries, but at the same time, like I said with the Oscar bait, you know, you can spot an Oscar movie from a mile away.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, I'm trying to think, The Theory of Everything. which is a movie that I respect. I think there's no reason that we can't make a movie about Stephen Hawking. There's no reason that we can't do that. But do we, you know, does it have to be such a, you know, cookie cutter movie, essentially? Do we, can't we actually cast a disabled person? Does it have to be Eddie Redmayne, who right. is kind of like a little bit of a darling? And that's nothing against Eddie Redmayne himself. It's just, I would like to see, if you're going to do that movie, do it right. I know there was a movie with Andrew Garfield called like Breath or Breathe or something like that. It like, it literally just came, it was just came and went. It was him and Claire Foy from The Crown.
And those are the movies.
It was totally just boring. It's just like, exactly. Oh, look, he's sick and he's going to overcome it. And I'm just like, it is a great story, but maybe you could tell it in a more interesting way.
Right. Those are the kinds of movies that don't really stick around in the zeitgeist. They come, they show up, they collect their awards, and then they slowly fade behind the curtain to let films like Boogie Nights reign.
Dude, if only Boogie Nights could have won an Oscar. God damn, it's such a good movie. but yeah, I think I'm glad that they got rid of it because it was so controversial. Well, they, I mean, they've gotten their press out of it now. So
yeah,
any press is good press, I suppose, for the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences.
Hopefully that'll bump up the viewership for this year's, you know, we're only what, 8 months away.
Yeah. It's weird. We're getting to the end of the year of, you know, we're going to start seeing like all the prestige pictures kind of start rolling out and see, what we're feeling in terms of, what we're feeling in terms of awards. But nonetheless, glad it's gone.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think everybody's pretty glad it's gone. Although I think there's arguments to be made that it would be interesting, but there's other award shows that kind of cover the populist vote, quote unquote.
Right. That, like the Emmys. The Emmys are kind of for that, I think. Well, Emmys are TV, right?
Emmys are TV. But like, I mean, you have stuff like the People's Choice Awards or like other stuff like that. There's other
or the
awards.
Golden Globes. That's what I meant to say.
Golden Globes. Yeah. That one's put on by the Hollywood Foreign Press. That one's always interesting.
That's one where like The Martian can win Best Comedy, you know, with Matt Damon.
Well, that's because they just didn't know what to qualify. I think it's, I mean, they put it in that category so it would have a chance of winning. Because it didn't really fall. But like, you know, the movie could have stood on its own. It doesn't have to win an award to be good. You know, that's just long and short of it. And most movies that are really good never win any awards of that caliber. They might win like some festival circuit stuff, but
how about let's say what maybe think up what a category they should add. Like, how about some transparency? How about most expensive movie of the year?
That'd actually be fucking hilarious. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, that would be
and
awesome.
It's just like, and like, it's like, congratulations, you spent a lot of money.
Yeah.
Like that would be like the pinnacle of cynical 2018 movie going.
Yeah.
It's just like, look how much fucking money we spent. Quality, what's that?
Yeah.
Because then Transformers could finally win an Oscar.
Exactly. Mark Wahlberg can finally stand up on that stage
and crack a Bud Light and be like, look, you see this?
Chuck three of them all at once.
Oh my God. I mean, most, you could have least diverse movie.
Yeah.
The Oscar Shame Awards, you know, just have ones like the Oscars that you don't want to win.
Exactly. Like, and have it just like behind the stage or something on a little soapbox.
Most damaging to women.
Have Ryan Seacrest host it every year.
Yeah.
And most damaging film goes to long pause.
Maybe that's when we do our Oscar bet this year. We'll have to have a conversation about what was the most damaging.
Yeah, there we go.
But yeah, no, I think that's a good idea. Have Oscars that you don't want to win, and then when you get nominated, you're just like, fuck. So one of the big movies that I think Connor and I are both excited about is The Predator coming
up.
Shane Black.
Olivia Munn.
You've got Keegan-Michael Key.
Yes.
You've got that one dude from Logan.
Right.
You've got Thomas Jane. You've got the kid from Room.
A lot of upwards inflection here, folks.
Yes. But so we want to take a moment to take a look back at a film franchise that I think is largely misunderstood, both by audiences and filmmakers alike, even the people making the films themselves. Let's take a look back at the Predator series. We'll be right back. right. So I think we have to preface this with some news that came out this week that I find, frankly, sickening. I think that's the only way I can really put it.
Right. So what happened?
So 20th Century Fox announced that they had to cut a scene from The Predator. And this is because director Shane Black, writer of Lethal Weapon, director of such films as The Nice Guys, Kiss Kiss Bang Bang.
Star in the original Predator.
Mm-hmm. He cast his friend, who is a registered sex offender. They put an actual predator in The Predator.
And
that's
now,
a terrible joke, but it's
now,
true.
Did he know about that ahead of time, or was it something that kind of slipped under his radar?
He absolutely knew about it. This, when they say in the headline, this is coming from the LA Times, when they say that Shane Black cast his friend, he cast his friend. This is actor Steven Wilder Strigel, 47 years old. He didn't have a huge role in the movie, but he had a quick 3-page scene shared with actress Olivia Munn. It was revealed, and Olivia Munn, she learned that Strigel is a registered sex offender who pleaded guilty in 2010 after facing allegations that he attempted to lure a 14-year-old female into a sexual relationship via the internet. And Shane Black knowingly cast him in this film.
And his response was not... Was it eloquent? I mean, did he...
I think non-eloquent would probably be the best way.
Did he apologize?
No, he said this. This is his quote. "I personally chose to help a friend. I can understand others might disapprove, as his conviction was on a sensitive charge and not to be taken lightly." That's very middle of the road.
And honestly, it sort of sounds like he's just trying to brush it off. Like, it's not like the... I understand that this isn't something to be taken lightly, but I'm going to take it lightly because it's my friend.
Right, and it's pretty pathetic. He said that he long believed that Strigel was, quote, "caught up in a bad situation versus something lecherous." What is more lecherous than trying to lure a 14-year-old into a fucking sexual relationship? That's like the definition of lecherous. You kidding me? Well, I'm angry. I'm fired up.
Well, hold on. It's easy to get fired up about this, and as you should, because it's a fucked up situation. But let's just talk about how many actors there are working out there who I presume there are actors that aren't, you know, registered sex offenders working in Hollywood that would have been perfect for a 3-page, like, I assume just a 3-minute scene with Olivia Munn that could have held their own. Why did it need to be this person, and why?
Because he's buddies with Shane Black.
Exactly. And
which
that's
sucks.
Bullshit.
It sucks because I like Shane Black. I like his movies. I mean, he's always had a bit of a problematic streak, but Kiss Kiss Bang Bang is a fantastic neo-noir. The Nice Guys was a total sleeper hit for me.
Yeah.
I was like, wow, I can't believe I didn't see this in theaters. I just happened to pick it up. Like, I saw it. I was like, oh, it's directed by Shane Black. It was like $5. I was like, I'll pick that up. I'll watch it. And I really, really enjoyed it. I like what he did. But this just shows a total, especially in a post-Me Too world, this shows a total lack of awareness. Like, read the room, man. Maybe... You know, you should have thought about it before you've been like, yeah, and it's not even a question. The guy is a registered sex offender. It's not like, oh, it's an ongoing case. Oh, you know, there's whispers about it, which even then you should probably reel it back a little bit. This guy is a convicted, he's a registered sex offender, and you cast him in a role, and this 3-page scene is basically this dude, Steven Wilder Strigel, hitting on Olivia Munn for a 3-pager.
That's what the scene was.
Yeah. Jesus. And they pulled it.
Well,
so,
good.
You know,
it's really got to make you wonder, like, what Shane Black, what went through his mind when he, during that decision making, did you think that he was above it all? You know,
and that's the
there's
part,
a million.
That we know because we have these quotes. I mean, he's not kidding. He said it was a sensitive charge and not to be taken lightly. You clearly took it lightly enough to cast him in your movie, where he's like being creepy towards a woman.
You gave him a check, which he undoubtedly cashed.
Yeah. So And I mean, just because you cut him from the movie, that guy still got paid to be in it.
Exactly.
Like, that happened. So, disappointing. Still going to see The Predator.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm a fan of the franchise.
It's not like a Victor Salva's case, you know, the guy who made Jeepers Creepers, who is himself a registered sex offender.
Yeah.
And still got distribution for his film.
Yeah. I think it was just a really dumb decision. I think Shane Black's going to be waiting for a while before he actually gets work again.
Yeah.
And probably rightfully so.
Probably deserves it. Yeah.
All right.
But...
Let's
gush a little bit.
Let's gush a little bit about The Predator.
Mm.
The Predator franchise, depending on how you want to look at it, is either 3 or 5 movies long.
And I like the latter.
More fan of the 5 movie.
I'm a fan of the Predator. Yes.
So it all kicks off in 1987 with the fantastic 80s action movie, The Predator, directed by John McTiernan, starring Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Shane Black.
Carl Weathers.
And I assume other people that I do not know.
Jesse Ventura.
Another bona fide statesman in the U.S.
Yeah. This movie was so good that
it launched two political careers.
When did you first see The Predator?
I watched it with my dad when I was about 10 years old. My dad had a penchant for... showing me movies that he wanted to watch without really considering the effect that it would have on me. I was 8 years old. I walked into a room, and my dad was watching The Shining at one point, and it was the Red Rum scene. And he was like, "Oh, Connor, come on, sit down." And me, being a dutiful son who loves his father, sat down and was promptly scarred for life afterwards. Oh, but then we watched The Predator, and The Predator is a little bit more... you know, all you're really getting are skinned commandos hanging upside down in a jungle.
That's not that bad.
You know, it's basically
a kid's movie.
It's Skittles in comparison.
Skittles. I think I first watched it. I didn't get to see it until high school. Like, I was aware of it because I knew the Alien versus Predator movies had come out. I didn't see them in theaters or anything like that, but. I first watched it in high school because my pal had it on VHS. Like, he had found his parents' old... We were in his room, and he had, like, just a little TV, and it had the built-in VHS player, and he had found, like, all these old VHS, and one of them was Predator.
Nah.
So we just, like, sat in his room and watched it, and we were like, this is fucking amazing. This is crazy. It's really... I really think it's up there in terms of... 80s action movies. It's very much an epitome of the style, especially coming from director John McTiernan, who also the year after Predator directs Die Hard.
Yeah.
So this is like
literally the
action.
Next year.
Yeah. So 87 is Predator, 88 is Die Hard. Spectacular.
Yeah.
I mean, one-two punch.
Well, yeah, exactly.
This movie was really interesting because it brought together all these big muscly dudes. It is very much a,
I love that.
It is very much a both a, I don't know, celebration and also satire in a sense of like that hyper 80s masculinity, and satire unintentionally. Like, we watched it fairly recently.
We were
going through a lot of these movies in anticipation of The Predator. You watch it, and it setups. It was so full of so many tropes, and it gets referenced so easily and flawlessly that when you watch, it's one of those things where it's like when you watch the original, you're like, "This is like comical," because you're seeing all the tropes at pretty much their origin.
Yeah, absolutely, and it's fucking hilarious.
It's got such a stupid sense of humor.
Yeah,
it's great.
And that's the thing, is you don't know if it is a sense of humor or not, or if the John McTiernan was just like, "This is awesome.
Yeah, this is rad, man.
Let's get Carl Weathers and Arnold Schwarzenegger to have a tableless arm wrestling fight."
That moment might be hands down one of the greatest in cinema.
Yes, Frank. Honestly, like,
and they just hold the shot.
Yeah. Oh, God. And they just start flexing, and he's like, yeah, God, that's hilarious.
Yeah, I think.
And let's talk about the pace of the movie. It's relentless. There isn't a dull moment in that movie.
You're just on a roller coaster. One of the interesting things to me is that in the opening, you get kind of that, I call it the Star Wars shot, where it's like just, you know, stars in space.
Yeah, sure.
And you catch the curvature of the Earth in this big ship.
When we were watching it, I was like, no opening crawl?
No. you get, like, the ship coming in, and you get the title, you know, the Predator. And then, like,
and
it just...
lone fireball.
Yeah. But then it just leaves that behind.
Yeah.
And then suddenly it's like, okay, you're in the jungle, South America, and you're with a bunch of commandos.
Arnold's chain smoking cigars.
Yeah, and in real life too. One of the things that's frequently talked about for the filming of that movie is that all those dudes, in order to stay in shape, they just kept up their regimen. They'd run like miles, you know, a certain number of miles in the morning, shoot like a 14-hour day, and then do all their workouts and stuff at night too, go to bed, and then be up again for like 5 in the morning to start all over again, shooting a full 12-14-hour day. All the while, Arnold is chain-smoking cigars, and it's just like, how do you even do that? These dudes are cut. Like, it's terrifying how in shape these guys are, except for Shane Black.
Yeah.
Who's just this squirrely little dude.
Yeah, and he's just there to tell terrible jokes pretty much up until he dies.
Yeah.
Spoiler alert.
So throughout the entirety of the movie, or throughout most of the movie, you get like little bits of the Predator, but it still feels like this commando movie. And then it just kind of takes a left turn and becomes, hunters become the hunted. And it's really interesting. And all the set pieces are really great. Lots of big booms and everything like that. Legendary special effects by Stan Winston, who worked on, he worked on The Thing. He worked eventually on Jurassic Park.
Probably the most like in the zeitgeist for special effects directors or whatever the term is.
Yeah, special,
supervisors or whatever.
Yeah, he definitely is one of the most well-known in the mainstream, for sure. And it's, well, you said to me off mic, it was like, we have to mention this. Let's talk about the original Predator suit.
Oh, my God, dude. Oh, God. You showed me this.
I did.
So Tom and I watched The Predator or Predator in 4K a couple weeks ago at his place. And you were telling me all of these awesome behind the scenes little bits of trivia, which we'll share now. Jean-Claude Van Damme was supposed to be the actor behind the Predator.
Yeah.
I don't know if he had gotten big in the U.S.
No,
yet.
He was not quite yet the muscles from Brussels.
Right, but he was on his way.
Yeah, this would have been like his first really big gig.
So they dressed him up in the original Predator outfit, which is bonkers. It's just fucking hilarious. You need to look up, if you are listening, you need to look up pictures of Jean-Claude Van Damme, because it's like, imagine like the lower half of a flamingo with the top half of like the lobster from the Amanda Bynes show.
it's like very crustacean.
Yeah.
And
the suit that they used when they shot, right? It was like pre-green screen or something.
Yeah, it was all orange so that they could do the camouflage effect, the invisible, sort of effect. And just looks insane. And there's Jean-Claude Van Damme just running around the jungle in this big orange suit.
And he must have been so pissed off.
Yeah. He eventually, he left the project and was, the Predator was replaced by Kevin Peter Hall, who did both Predator 1 and 2. And so they had to, they saw the dailies with this suit. And they were like, okay, we need to overhaul this
shit. The rendering, it looks pretty cool. Like, they do the rendering so it doesn't just look like an orange lobster suit.
But they have some, they do have, like, just the raw footage of the orange lobster suit.
And that is hilarious.
It
and
is
you have
spectacular.
To watch it. But I guess what the studio execs basically said after seeing the dailies is it's just like, it looks like a Power Rangers villain.
Yeah, they're just like, this is stupid.
Yeah.
Like, we can't put this in the movie. Like, they just, even when they were to finish, if they were to finish that suit and have all the, like, scales and shit, it wasn't scary. There wasn't anything intimidating about it, really. It just looked like a terrible B-movie villain. So, as the legend goes, they stopped shooting for a while, and they were like, okay, you guys have some time. Please redesign this suit. So they call upon Stan Winston to do it, and he's sitting on a plane and he's doing sketches and everything. He's like trying to figure out this new Predator design, and this guy sitting next to him, he's just like, "Hey, man, you know what you should do?" He's like, "I've always wanted to do this for like a creature. I want you to put mandibles on it."
Mandibles.
Yeah, mandibles. And he's just like, yeah, that'd be so cool. The four pincers on his face. That'd be so fucking cool. And so he does. And
it'll
then
make people shit with their mouths open. It sounds like something that he would say.
Yeah. And
it's literally something that he said.
Yeah. And again, as the story goes, that was James Cameron. James Cameron, because him and Stan Winston worked on Aliens. And
wait, he and Stanley or
Stan Winston and Jim Cameron were they like Stan Winston did Aliens.
Oh, really?
That's yeah. So he helped with the practical effects on that, and Jim Cameron was just like, dude, you gotta put mandibles on that shit. It's gonna make people shit with their mouths up there.
That is literally what James Cameron said about the Avatar sequels. That's what he said it's gonna do to people. Which, you know, I guess I'll go in with an empty...
Didn't that movie come out like 10 years ago now?
Yeah, yeah. And there's going to be, I think he said, 40 sequels that he's going to release over the next 10 years. So I guess go to those movies with an empty stomach. But that's fucking incredible that James Cameron, of James Cameron fame, was the one that sat next to Stan Winston and helped that out.
Yeah, and created what I would argue is like in the top 10 most recognizable and influential creature designs ever.
Absolutely.
I mean,
you got H.R. Giger's Alien.
You've got, I'd say E.T. is probably in that conversation in terms of recognizable and like, well, like people see, they see E.T. and they're like, yeah, that's fucking E.T. I know E.T.
The work that Guillermo del Toro's done with his films like Pan's Labyrinth in terms of just distinctive monster creatures.
Yeah. So, as you said, Predator is a nonstop thrill ride. It is the epitome of the 80s movie, the 80s action movie, and I think still bears influence on a lot of stuff today. I think a lot of people incorrectly go into it thinking it's going to be a horror. It's really not.
Exactly.
It's action. It's big. It's loud. There are horror elements because they're being hunted.
But they never really commit to it.
No. It's a good blend. It's got the tense moments where you're just like, oh man, the Predator's watching them, but it never at any point is something like Alien,
right?
Which, despite the fact that those two franchises would eventually be mixed together, they really have just two totally different worlds.
And that's what I think is really cool about Predator is that if you want to watch a sci-fi movie that has a good amount of action in it and everything, but you don't want it to get too cerebral, like if you want to watch a movie with your parents or something, put on Predator. Or you want to watch a movie with somebody who maybe isn't super into like a cerebral sci-fi like Blade Runner or Alien, put on Predator.
They're gonna shit their pants. Let's quickly get to some of the sequels, though, because a lot of people... So you have Predator, which is still, hands down, the high watermark of the series.
Still, yes.
Get Predator 2 in 1990, and it's not vastly different, but they essentially take Predator and transplant it to the city.
Yeah, from the jungle to the concrete jungle.
Bingo. And I think that's really the best idea they could have had. They're just like, yeah, what if we took the Predator and put him in a large metropolitan area? And it takes place in the far-flung future of 1997.
Brutal.
Yeah, during a heat wave in LA. Stars Danny Glover, Bill Paxton, and of course the amazing Gary Busey. It is, I think, a movie that doubles down on its concept. I would say it's way more ridiculous than Predator, which is really saying something.
Yeah.
But I think it started to earn itself status as a cult hit and really B-movie status because it does do a lot of cool stuff. There are a lot of cool kills. I think Bill Paxton is hilarious in it as this like jive talking, like, you know, he's just like this really like slick dude from Texas or something that comes to LA and he's like Billy the fucking Kid, and him and Danny Glover have almost this Lethal Weapon-esque back
and forth.
Yeah. Danny Glover, I think, is really good in it. I think he was a great choice,
yeah,
especially because he was riding high after the, you know, on the Lethal Weapon series. He
probably literally. Extra.
Yeah. and it's just, they kind of like expand the mythos a little bit while still being completely insane. It all centers, like, there's this whole gang war going on. Like, in 1997 LA, which is the future also.
Yeah.
And
which is the future also, even.
And it really is a lot of fun to watch, I think. If you just get past it, like, people watch Predator for the fun. It's fun. It's ridiculous. This is, if you think you're going into anything other than like a creature feature, then you've totally missed the point. People hold Predator in really high regard. And, like, you get people who write think pieces about how, like, Predator is like, oh, God, this is, like, so good. It's so perfect movie making.
So thoughtful.
For its genre, it is.
Yes.
And Predator 2 is not, like, it doesn't have as many memorable lines. It doesn't have as many moments that feel so perfect. The directing is not quite there.
If nothing else, it's a good sequel.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. It tries to do things a little bit different while still holding over the essential parts of the first Predator, but it didn't really do nearly what as well as 20th Century Fox would have hoped, and they pretty much shelved it
for 20 years. It sat dormant. Until the future, 2000.
I think it was 13, 14 years.
When was the second one released?
1990.
Oh, 1990.
And then 2004 was Alien versus Predator.
Oh, right.
Okay. A really interesting idea to quote unquote horror franchises. Now, it had basis in comic culture. They had Dark Horse Comics had done the Alien versus Predator comic book series.
Yep.
There were video games, Alien vs. Predator, so it wasn't, like, out of nowhere.
But in the execution, let's just say it's much more Predator than Alien in terms of atmosphere and execution of the film. It's not really horror.
It's not horror at all, I'd say.
It's much more Predator, which is interesting because you said, you brought this up, which I thought was a really interesting point, is that if you want to look at it as a continuous universe, Alien... The Predator doesn't exist in the Alien universe, but AVP does exist in the Predator universe, right?
Yeah, Predators do not exist in the Alien universe, but Aliens exist in the Predator universe.
And I think that that's awesome.
Yeah.
I totally want to subscribe to that idea.
Yeah.
And I will.
And because those movies are definitely more ridiculous, like the Alien films were always a little bit more prestige-y in a sense, because they were dealing with the weight of Ridley Scott's original Alien, which is a... It is not like a big budget thing. It's like art.
Yeah.
And the Predator films in their own way are art, as all films are in their own way art, but has always been more of the B movie aesthetic. Especially with the recent, you know, Alien revival with Prometheus and Alien Covenant. Those are much more like, you know,
action blockbuster.
But still they have that seriousness around them. The Predator movies are not serious in any way, shape, or form.
No, not at all. They're both special, but in very different ways.
Very different ways. We'll skip past AVP Requiem because Jesus Christ.
We have covered that extensively in past episodes.
Like a year ago. Yeah. I think it was pretty early on. Yeah. We covered that. Predators.
Yes.
Directed by Nimrod Antal,
mm-hmm.
but produced by Robert Rodriguez. Kind of does the whole most dangerous game thing. I mean, you know, which is really all of them is the whole most dangerous game concept.
It kind of reverses. It's not people on their comfortable turf where the predator is in a new environment. It's sort of reversing that, right?
Yeah. So basically you get a set of criminals and ne'er-do-wells. Warriors is really what I would describe them as. They're all like military. They're like mercenaries from various conflicts across the globe. They get brought to this like game reserve on the predator home planet. And things ensue as a Predator movie does.
The cast is great. The cast is maybe as good as I haven't seen a better cast since the second Predator.
Yeah. Adrian Brody was a really weird choice.
Yeah.
You've got Adrian Brody.
Topher Grace.
Lawrence Fishburne.
Fuck yeah.
In a surprise cameo.
Yeah.
Danny Trejo.
Mm-hmm.
Mahershala Ali.
Yes.
Oscar winner Mahershala Ali is
in Predators.
Yeah, he's in Predators. He's like from, you know, some stereotypical...
backstory.
Yeah, stereotypical like African conflict. I'm sure he wasn't like psyched about it, but whatever. He's a working actor. He's got to do what he's got to do. And now he's an Oscar winner, so who the fuck cares?
Yeah, exactly.
So I think Predators is the one that really I did not find nearly as fun. It skewed too serious. Even though there are ridiculous moments, it definitely skews a little bit too intense.
They doubled down too much on the sci-fi concept, I think.
Yeah, which is fine, but the Predator movies work when it's the alien, you know, it's the Predator coming to Earth.
Yeah.
And they have to have a sense of humor about themselves because they are such ridiculous movies. It's a totally, like I said, it's a creature feature. It's a B movie. This is here to be fun. And hopefully you get some really well-directed stuff along the way in terms of action scenes and kills and everything like that. You don't go and watch the Halloween sequels because the story is so fucking good.
No.
Even the original Halloween, it's a slasher. But it's really good. It's just a really well-made slasher.
Right.
You know, this is genre film. So Predators does a decent job. I think it tried to get people... You know, it was trying to ride the wave of a renewed interest in genre film because of the superhero boom, which really, if you ask me, starts truly in 2008 with Iron Man.
Right.
And then over the next couple of years, people get really more interested in being, it was really trying to bring back, you know, be part of the whole geek culture of the, you know, so it came out in 2010, but it was trying to ride that wave
of late aughts.
Yeah, of the late aughts. Nerd thing, like yeah. Nerd culture was cool again. It was cool to be into sci-fi. It was cool to be into this, and maybe that's just my perception of it because we were growing up during that time.
No, but it definitely seems like that, right? And looking back on it, I think that the bones of the Predators were good. I think that the characters were interesting and everything, but like you said, it just got too self-serious with the relationships of the characters that you just ultimately don't give a shit about.
Yeah.
Right? Because that's kind of what
they weren't even likable.
No, none of them were.
Lawrence Fishburne was cool because his whole thing was that he had been stuck on the planet for a really long time.
Yeah.
Adrian Brody being like doing his best Christian Bale as Batman impersonation with his voice. I was in the penis.
Where is she? Where is Predator?
Where is the goddamn Predator?
Where is the ship?
But it was a decent shot. Surprisingly great performance from Topher fucking Grace.
Yes, that's my favorite part of the movie.
It's so funny to see it. Like, when I saw him, and I had no idea he was in it when I saw it in theaters. And I was just like, wait, what? Is that Foreman?
Yeah.
Foreman?
Like, I just watched Spider-Man 3. And he kind of does like a little Eddie Brock-ishness, you know, when Eddie Brock starts losing his mind. That's kind of the Topher Grace that you see in Predators. And it's funny that you say that Adrian Brody's kind of doing his Christian Bale, because I kind of got a little Heath Ledger out of Topher Grace, particularly at the end of Predators.
Yeah, trying to be like psycho and like strange and shit like that. If you haven't seen Predators, I mean, spoiler alert, but honestly... It's like not that. I think it's a pretty good twist, but it's kind of a, you know, it's not going to change how you feel about the movie, I don't think. Because the whole movie, he's paired up with all these killers, but he's like this nerdy doctor,
mm-hmm.
and he's just totally out of place.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, it's a dog whistle at the beginning of the movie. They're like, oh, what's the deal with this dude?
Yeah.
And granted, the movie does kind of make you forget about it for a little while, which makes it a decent twist.
Exactly.
But it comes out that Topher Grace is a serial killer doctor.
Yeah, he was the worst of them all the entire time.
Yes, he was the true predator, the sneakiest.
Yeah.
And it pretty much goes about, the movie goes along as you might expect for a Predator movie. I'd say a decent 5 out of 10. It can be entertaining if you're into it. If you're coming off of watching the previous two, you might be still riding that high of being like, yeah, I just love watching this shit go down. But it really hits too many of the same beats to feel original, especially after Predator 2 kind of did that in a sense. But like, literally, you have one of the characters who is he's a Yakuza, and they basically redo the scene from Predator with with Billy, the Native American character, where he has like a sword fight. I mean, except this time you actually see him fight the Predator.
Yeah, they show it. Yeah,
but Predator's probably the weakest apart from the AVP films.
Okay, so here's a question that I wanted to ask you quickly before we wrap it up. Mm-hmm. We'll call it AVPVPs. Which is better, AVP or Predators? Which would you prefer to watch? Because they're both pretty middling, I think.
I'd take Predators.
Really?
Yeah, because, I mean, I honestly don't mind AVP, but it's just so, it's so not uninteresting, not only, like, plot and, I mean, it has some interesting characters. Shout out to AVP for having a black woman as a lead.
Yeah.
You know, you have to give it up for that, in a sense, but, like, it's very boring most of the time, and even the action sequences. It was directed by Paul W.S. Anderson, who mm-hmm. is famous for doing the Resident Evil films, yeah. which even I have a little bit of an affinity for because they're so stupid. But there, even the action scenes were just like completely uninteresting. At least in Predators, there's still some of that flavor, still some of that like original Predator flavor. I think having Robert Rodriguez on board was a boon for the movie, but also...
surprising because there's not much humor in it, you know.
No, it's very humorless in a lot of ways. It takes itself so seriously comparatively to the rest of the series. I would have liked to have seen Robert Rodriguez direct it, but also I kind of don't like him. He's of a certain ilk. I like yeah. some of his movies. I don't like other ones. I feel like having that From Dusk Till Dawn energy might have been more of a help for it.
Yeah. That would have been cool.
Because even, I would say Predator and Predator 2 have a little bit of that crazy From Dusk Till Dawn energy where things just take a left turn.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, it starts out one type of movie, and then it just takes a left turn. And From Dusk Till Dawn, I think, is still a great version of that type of movie, the genre action pick.
Absolutely.
And so maybe,
I could have done with getting beaten over the head a little bit more by campiness, which is what sure. Robert Rodriguez, I feel like he always delivers.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of NoCo Cinema. I know it was a very talky one, but you know, there was lots to talk about. I assure you we're going to have lots of great interviews coming up. New stuff. I mean, we've got film festivals coming up. You'll probably see some coverage from Middle Coast. You'll see some stuff from the Asian Pop-Up Cinema, hopefully. Conversations with our good friends, David Holcomb.
And Michael Smith.
Yes, they've both got new projects coming out that we are both very excited about. Please, you know, head on over to Apple, you know, wherever you listen to your podcasts, find the show, give us a rating, leave your comments, let us know how you think we're doing. If you enjoy the show, it really helps us get the show out there. We really appreciate it. We love you guys so much for sticking with us for well over a year now.
Yeah.
We've been doing this. So don't forget to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. It's all NoCo Cinema on there. And we will see you all next week. This has been NoCo Cinema on WGM Plus, your guide to cinema here in the city of Chicago. I am Tom Hush.
And I'm Connor Cornelius.
And again, we'll see you all next week.